Good evening and welcome to a very special two-hour Now That's Weird, starting off in Series 2 with me, Ross Hemsworth. Now, how many of you out there have been on a spiritual journey? A journey that's taken you from, I suppose you would say, skeptic to believer. I have. I've been through that journey. And everybody that I've spoken to has taken that journey in a different way. But whichever way you've taken yours, you will certainly know this man's story. Perhaps not as well as you think, though. With me in the studio tonight and for the next 2 hours, we're going to be looking at the story of one man who's almost led the way in journeys themselves. Let me introduce to the world, online and on EMTV, Mr. David Icke. David, good evening.
Hello, Ross.
Now, it's brilliant to have you here, David, and I know you don't do live television very often, so this is a real treat for us here to be able to do this, and thanks for joining us.
Well, you know, this is a great night for me because it wasn't too many years ago that I couldn't fill a phone box, and, you know, I've been speaking to the dog when the man didn't turn up. And here we are, literally giving the world the opportunity to hear this information. And, you know, there's lots of things happening in the world that aren't good, and this whole Orwellian Big Brother state is moving forward, apparently with ever-increasing speed. But we should not forget that some fantastic things are happening. There's a great awakening going on. And in so many ways, this program tonight and this channel in general is a physical expression of just how far we've come. Because we, through the internet and through television organizations like this, can now challenge the suppression of the mainstream media, which is the key block in the public in general receiving information to let them see that the view of the world and the perception of the world that we're told from cradle to grave to believe in is not the only one.
Absolutely. Well, let's start at the beginning, because a lot of people know what you went through when you did the Terry Wogan interview. I want to go back prior
to
that.
I'm the son of God.
That's it, you're nuts, aren't you? That's the
I'm a nutter. He's a nutter. Come on, Ethel, he's a nutter. That nutter's on.
Yeah, that's why they're all tuning in tonight. There was some more of that. But no, seriously, before that, you had a psychic talk to you and predict certain things to you. Now, let's take the story from there, because I find that really interesting, what happened to you and your reflection of that. Bearing in mind at the time, as you said to me beforehand, you were just commentating on snooker. You knew about Jimmy White, nothing about this stuff.
Yeah. Actually, the first psychic I went to a clairvoyant, and when I got there was a note. It said, closed due to unforeseen circumstances, which I thought, quite funny. But no, the one we're talking about was a life-changing moment, because what happened is, you know, I'm living my life. I've been a professional soccer player, arthritis, finished that. I was in television and journalism and national spokesman for the British Green Party. But towards the end of the 1980s, some very strange things started happening to me, not least when I was in a room alone. It increasingly felt I was not alone. Now, there's no one physically in the room, but there was a presence. And this got more and more powerful through 1989. And I got to the point in early 1990, I remember it. I was in a hotel, the Kensington Hilton Hotel, working for the BBC. And this presence had got so powerful that I sat on the edge of the bed and I said, if there's something there, would you please contact me? Because you're driving me up the wall. A few days later, I'm playing football with my son, Gareth, who's a big fella now, a little lad then. And we were going to have some lunch in a little cafe on the railway station at the seafront after the football. And someone stopped me and started talking to me. And then when we finished talking, I realized Gareth wasn't there. But I knew he was in this news shop selling the newspapers and the books. And I walked in and I said to him, come on, Gaz, we'll go and get some lunch. At that point, as I turned to move, my feet were stuck to the ground, right? And it was like two magnets were pulling my feet to the ground. And of course, you know, what the heck's going on here? And then I heard, not a voice, but a really strong thought form pass through my mind, because we're just decoding them. They appear as words because that's how we decode vibrations into language. It's what the brain does. But what I heard, and it didn't come from me, was go and look at the books on the far side. Go and look at the books on the far side. I mean, feet stuck to the ground, what the hell's going on? So I went over in a state of total bewilderment, and in among the books, among romantic novels was this one book with a woman's face on the front. And I picked it up and I turned it over and I immediately saw in the blurb the word psychic. And what struck me immediately was, well, could this woman tell me what the heck I'm feeling around me in this presence? So I read the book in 24 hours, went to see her. And all I told her was that I had arthritis, which I have, finished my football career. And, you know, I don't take drugs for it, never have. So maybe her hands-on healing would help. I told her nothing else. So I went a couple of times, and it was interesting, talking about other dimensions and stuff. All made sense to me. Because up to that point, I'd rejected conventional religion. I'd rejected the idea that what bravely calls itself science says that this is all a cosmic accident and, you know, life's a bitch and then you die. But what was the alternative? Now this is when this started. And I went a couple of times and it was fine. And then the third time, I'm lying there on the bench and she's doing this hands-on healing near my left knee here. And I suddenly felt this like spider's web on my face. And this took me aback because when I'd read her book, she was talking about, well, when other dimensions are trying to connect into you, sometimes you feel a spider's web on your face. Well, I never have since, and I never did before, but at that moment, on that one day, it was really powerful. So I feel this spider's web, and my bum's starting to slip down the down. What's going on? I read about this in her book. I never said anything to her, but about 10 to 15 seconds later, she's doing the hands-on healing, and then she launches her head back, and she goes, my God, I'm going to have to close my eyes for this one. And I'm going, close my eyes for what? What? And this is March 1990, and she starts telling me there's some figure in her mind, and which is just a projection that she can relate to from this reality. It's energy. It's the consciousness. And that this is telling her that to tell me things like, me confirm, I'm introducing the sport on the BBC at the time, and now I was being told that I was going to go out eventually on a world stage and reveal great secrets, that I was going to write 5 books in 3 years on these subjects. Sounded ludicrous to me. I don't know nothing about these subjects. What is, you know, what do you want sort of stuff? And one man cannot change the world, but one man can communicate the message that can change the world. That was another line I remember. And that there was going to be what was described as a spiritual revolution. And humanity was basically going to wake up from its amnesic state. All of which, you know, you're talking to a sports presenter, you know. But something on a deep level said, this is right. I'm going to go with this. You know, this is going, what's going on? What's going on? What's happening to me life? Something deeper was saying, go with this. And so many, many synchronistic things happened after that. And I left the BBC. They got rid of me, which was brilliant because I probably wouldn't have left otherwise. And I started putting a book together called Truth Vibrations, which was the title was about what I was being told by this psychic, that she was being told to tell me that there was going to be a vibrational change and that was going to open up people from their amnesic state. There seemed no sign of it then. My goodness me, are you kidding today?
Absolutely.
It's happening. And so I started writing this book and through 1990, and then the key moment, really, I guess, that really launched me into this and launched me into mass ridicule was towards the end of 1990. I kept getting this feeling I had to go to Peru. And where it was coming from, I don't know, or didn't know. And I kept coming across things relating to Peru, you know, in the synchronistic way it happened. So just purely on intuition, in February 1991, I get on a plane, I go to Peru. Amazing things happened over a period of 3 weeks, but it all culminated when I was being taken around by this Peruvian guide, and he books us into this hotel at a place called Puno, which is near Lake Titicaca, the highest navigable lake in the world, they say. And this hotel is called the Siustani, which is named after an Inca ruin about an hour and a half away, and there's pictures of this thing all over the hotel. So every time I looked at the picture, I felt, I want to go there. So I hire this tourist bus and driver and this tourist guide, and we go off to see Ustani. And it's a beautiful place in the middle of nowhere. A big hill with all the ruins on the top and a lagoon on three sides. And there was nobody there apart from two kids and a llama for pictures. And there were no tourists. So I go around this ruin for about an hour. And it was very nice, and it's a beautiful day, not cloud in the sky, piercing hot sun. But when I went back to the bus to go home, I was disappointed because the power of go there was not matched by my experience. So I get in the bus, and I'm looking out the window, and about 3 minutes down the road, going back to Puno. I'm looking out the window, and I see this mound, this big mound to my right. And as I looked at it, all I could hear in my head was, come to me, come to me, come to me. I'm thinking, you know, I present the sport, mate. This mound's talking to me. This is what's happening to me. Anyway, I said to the guy, could you stop the bus? I want to go up that mound. So I went up the mound thinking I'd be a few minutes. I was about an hour, maybe more, because of what happened. Time just became irrelevant. I climbed this mound, and when I got to the top, I couldn't see it from the road. There was this circle of standing stones, like a mini Stonehenge, about waist high the stones were. And I walk into the center of this mound, circle on the mound. And I'm looking back to see Ustani just across the way. And as I got to the center, the feet business started, like in the news shop, only with serious interest this time. And my feet started to burn and being pulled to the ground. Then I felt like a drill going in the top of my head, threw my body into the ground.
That'd have been enough for me. I'd have been off.
Yeah, well, I couldn't because my feet wouldn't move. And then I heard two things go through my mind very powerfully and loudly. One, they'll be talking about this 100 years from now. What? And secondly, it will be over when you feel the rain. Now, it's a piercing hot, cloudless Peruvian sky. Then, as this energy builds up, my arms go out at 45 degrees like that, and I haven't made any decision to do it. And actually, I leave my arms like that, they're already starting to ache. Well, my arms were like that for the best part of an hour, right? Didn't feel it, but afterwards, agony, you know. So what happened over this period of time is, you know when you're driving a car and you can't remember the last 2 miles because your subconscious has been driving the car? Well, I kept going in and out of conscious awareness like that. And my body's starting to shake. This energy comes through me. And I then noticed in one of these come-back-to-consciousness times that there was a dark gray mist over the distant mountains, a light gray mist to start with, and it got darker. And it was very clear that it had started to rain over the distant mountains. And what I then experienced was this, I mean, you couldn't make it up, really. I mean, if you did it in a fantasy movie, you'd say, oh, that's far-fetched. But this storm came out of these mountains and came towards me. You know, weathermen talk about a weather front. Well, it was a straight line, the clouds coming across. It was like a curtains coming across the sky. And the sun was covered, the sun went in, and then I was literally standing there, shaking with this energy, and I was seeing stair rod rain move towards me. And eventually it hit me. And when it hit me, this energy coming through me stopped. And I staggered forward. My legs were like jelly and my arms were agony. And from that moment, my life was transformed.
It's like a Kundalini experience.
Kind of, but I don't completely understand what happened. But what I would describe it as this, because what followed is I came back to England. Truth Vibrations came out. I went on prime time talk show television with a guy called Terry Wogan, for people around the world that don't come from the UK. And on primetime television, faced mass ridicule from the audience and stuff for what I was talking about. And what happened in that period of the Wogan show, I can describe like this. Once that experience in Peru had happened, my mind became filled with concepts, understandings, information. But it was all like swirling around and didn't make sense, but it was filling my mind. And it was like the waters had burst, the eggshell had burst, and suddenly information was pouring in. And you know when you press a computer keys too many times, right? And it can't process that information. It freezes.
Yeah.
I can't process this. I'm freezing. Thank you. Well, that's what basically happened to me for about 3 months.
In hindsight, do you think you took the decision to do the Wogan Show too early?
No, it was perfect. It's all perfect. Because to do what I've done since needs you to be in a state where you have cleansed yourself, where you were free of the fear of what other people think, because you're talking about things that are way out, that for most people who are imprisoned by the norms they've been programmed to believe in through their lives, anything outside that norm is crazy or dangerous. Well, I was going to go massively out of that norm, even more so in years to come, and I was obviously going to be seen in those terms. If I cared about what people thought of me, if I was going to be affected by fear of what other people think to the point where I was not going to talk about it, then I wouldn't be any good at doing what I'm doing. So that had to be cleansed. And so I look back at that whole mass ridicule that followed the Wogan Show and the newspaper stuff with not quite affection, but I know it was vital. Because
part of a learning curve, perhaps. Huh?
It freed me, Ross, of the prison, the biggest prison that most people live in, which is the fear of what other people think. Once you are in fear of what other people think, someone else is living your life, someone else is dictating your reality, someone else is putting invisible walls around your free expression and free thought. Well, you know, this is what I think and this is what I like to say, but what will my mother think? Oh, what about the blokes at work and all this stuff? Well, I was cleared of that by mass ridicule, where I couldn't walk down a street without being laughed at. Absolutely. Couldn't go in a bar. There was uproar.
That was the shell suit that did that, you know.
Yeah, well, whatever it was.
Let's take a break at that point, because I want to move us forward now to the talk that you did at Brixton.
Right.
So we've got a picture now of leading up to that, and then we'll sort of work backwards, because you did this talk to thousands of people at Brixton Academy. The actual talk itself was 7 hours. I don't know how you did it. But let's have a little look at a clip of that first to give people an idea. Just watch a few minutes of this and then we'll talk to David about it. This was Brixton Academy.
As Voltaire said, so long as the people do not care to exercise their freedom, those who wish to tyrannize will do so. For tyrants are active and ardent and will devote themselves in the name of any number of gods, religious or otherwise, to put shackles upon sleeping men. And of course, first, you must have sleeping men and women, and that's what the whole deal has been about. You are getting sleepy, 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 sleepy. Good evening! Now tonight's news. These people are hypnotists, don't realize it. They're programming a reality by repetition of a version of reality that they pound out on their mainstream news all the time. We see things not as they are, but as we are. The conspiracy in a line. The idea is to get us to think that we are the person we see reflected in the mirror. No, that's the vehicle we're using to experience this reality. This is who we are. Division is what they want. A sense of oneness is what they don't want. We are consciousness, we are energy, we are all one consciousness. So, where are we? Where are we? We are in our own minds, basically. We are in our own heads, symbolically. We are decoding reality in our own minds. It's not out there, it's in here. We are taking frequency fields and vibrational fields, and we are, through the brain, turning them into a holographic reality that does not exist out there. Holograms appear to exist in space, but they don't. Holograms you buy in the shops. This hologram doesn't have space either. We are decoding it into a holographic television station within the frequency of visible light. We talk about seeing is believing, but it ain't. Believing is seeing. Because what we believe affects what we decode and therefore what we see. There's that great line in the Matrix movie where the Neo character is saying to the Morpheus character, "What is real?" And Morpheus says words to the effect of, "What is real? If you're talking about what we can see, touch, taste, hear, etc., then real is just electrical signals interpreted by your mind." That's absolutely what we're doing, because the five senses decode vibrational frequencies and then send those signals to the brain, and it's the brain that decodes them into the reality we think we're experiencing. So hypnotists can manipulate reality in their various forms. The visual cortex areas of the brain do it in relationship to the eyes. What we think is out there actually exists, symbolically anyway, in our head.
Well, that was David Icke there speaking at the Brixton Academy earlier this year. And it poses the question now, where are we now?
Well, just picking up the story, Ross, after that great ridicule and all those things that happened to me, after about 3 months, everything morphed back into some kind of clarity. It was like the computer unfroze, and I saw the world in a completely different way. I seemed to be the same bloke I was before it all turned out, but I wasn't. I was seeing the world in a completely different way. And I went through this amazing journey, which started then, of some invisible force, I can only say, handing me pieces in the puzzle in an order that I could understand them. And I went through a period of many years through the 90s where I was being given information about the conspiracy in the world that we consciously experience, the banking conspiracy, the interbreeding family network, which is behind global society, manipulates global society, the agenda for the world fascist state, the Orwellian state, which is now coming in all these years later, we're now seeing it. And then it went on to the next stage, which was about, and the most crucial stage, is about understanding the nature of reality, who we are, where we are, and how we interact with it, and how we can control our reality, how we can live our lives instead of letting life live us. So that was the sequence. And where are we? We're in the equivalent of a holographic internet. We are decoders. We are awareness. We are decoding frequency fields in exactly the same way, in principle, as a computer decodes the wireless internet. You know, if this television station has the wireless internet, then where is it?
Absolutely.
It's here, but we can't see it. But get a computer and tune it into the internet, and suddenly on the screen, our brain, comes a collective reality. You go onto the internet with a computer in China or South America or London or New York, and you are connecting in to the same collective reality. What different people make of that internet collective reality is their unique spin on it, but they're all experiencing the same reality, and that's what we're doing. These bodies are computers. They are biological computers. They have the ability to think for themselves up to a point, not just react to data. That's what evolution is. It's the computer reacting to environmental changes and responding to them. When they respond quick enough, we call that evolution. When they can't respond quick enough, we call that extinction. And so we are decoding
information.
Reality into this holographic world.
I've got to stop you
world.
There, David, because we're going into a break. Let me come back with some more in just a moment. Now, you can text into the show. You text the word EDGE, leave a gap, and then 87778. So that's EDGE, leave a gap, and then it's any message you want for David, any question, 87778. And we'll put those to David in the next part. We're also going to be looking at some more clips of the DVD from Brixton Academy. It's going to be an interesting couple of hours. Stay tuned with Now That's Weird with me, Ross Hemsworth, and David Icke. And we'll be looking at some texts when we start in our two. Hope you're enjoying it so far. Don't go anywhere. Don't rush out to the kitchen. Yeah. Weird. Now, you guys out there have already crashed all the bandwidth. Apparently, the webcasts are oversubscribed. All around the world, people are tuning in, as we thought you probably would. So thank you all, wherever you are, anywhere in the world, tuning in tonight. We appreciate it. The text number here is 87778. We will be going to your texts in hour two. We haven't forgotten you. Don't worry if you've already texted in. We'll be doing that in the second hour of the programme. Now, type the word EDGE, leave a gap, and then your message. Keep it short and sharp, please, for David, and try and keep it on topic if you can. That would be greatly appreciated. Now, just before the break, we were talking about the nature of reality, David. What is the nature of reality? Do we live in a matrix?
Well, we live in an illusory reality in the sense that, you know, quantum physics has shown that this world is illusory in the sense that science says that this physical world is made of atoms, right? And well, that's quite soft. I'll give it one on them. This floor seems very hard. But everything in this world that appears so solid, including us, is made of atoms. And atoms have no solidity. They're pockets of energy. That's all they are. So how does something that has no solidity make up a solid world? It can't. What's the answer to this? Well, it's simple. The world ain't solid. We are decoding it through this body computer, which is a receiver transmitter of information, and it's a crystalline organism. I mean, I was looking with a doctor in America a few weeks ago through a massively powerful microscope at blood, my own blood. And if you go, if you magnify enough, what does the blood become? It becomes crystal. Right? DNA is crystal. That every cell, and we have trillions of them, the membrane of every cell is crystalline. We are crystals decoding and receiving information. So, put it this way. If you said to someone, what is the internet? They'd say, oh, well, it's websites and graphics and colors on a screen. Yeah, it is. But the only place that the internet exists in that form is on the computer screen. Everywhere else, it's electronic circuits, etc. People say, okay, tell me about television. Oh, it's moving pictures on a screen. Well, it is, but the only place that television exists in that form is actually on the screen. Everywhere else, it's electronic circuits and broadcast frequency fields. And what the television and the computer are doing, the great example with the television, it's receiving information in a frequency form, and it's decoding it into pictures on the screen. That's what we're doing in a much more sophisticated and a much more advanced way. We are taking frequency fields, vibrational fields, and we are turning them into this apparently solid, but not so, holographic, illusory reality, which only exists not only on our screen, but only exists in a series of micro frequencies that we call visible light. Because, you know, as I was saying in that clip from Brixton, people think they see with their eyes, but they don't. The eyes are part of the decoding process, but it's the brain that constructs reality. This is why a hypnotist can intervene in the decoding process by implanting the belief. A belief is a program. It makes the brain decode reality in accordance with the belief. This is why religious beliefs, political beliefs, scientific beliefs, all these cultural beliefs are so powerful in imprisoning people in this false reality and these belief systems, these prison cells. And what a hypnotist is doing is implanting a programmed belief which then decodes reality to fit. So, someone's eating a potato. I've seen this happen. And they're eating a potato. The implanted belief by the hypnotist is that they're eating an apple. So what do they taste? They taste an apple, because the brain's decoding system has been programmed to read that and not what it's really being sent. Now, you take that over the wider scale of society. You take it on board that behind the politicians and the banking system and the transnational corporations and all these people, the military and the media at ownership level, are a network of interbreeding families that go back to the ancient world. And they understand, at least the core of them do, that we are living in this illusory matrix decoded reality. And the mass of the people are told from cradle to grave that this is all real, this is all solid, and there is an out there world which actually only exists in here. We think it's out there, it's an illusion. And so when you have the understanding of how reality works and how we're decoding it, and you're a few, and the people you're manipulating do not, then you are suddenly in a position of fantastic power. And so suppression of this knowledge by the inquisitions, by the colonial powers going into countries and destroying the native knowledge and the knowledge passed through the shamans and the native channels of information as it passed through the centuries. They attacked that and they targeted that because they didn't want that stuff to be understood and passed on.
Knowledge is power.
They wanted to then replace that with a fake reality, a fake science, a fake version of history, which keeps people in constant states of bewilderment. And so when my journey led me to start to understand the nature of reality, then from that perspective, you can start to understand why society is structured as it is. If you've got a transmitter receiver that is in optimum mode and optimum efficiency, you are going to access levels of understanding and levels of awareness, but you're not going to if your receiver-transmitter system is in a state of imbalance, a state of disharmony, a state of like having a computer virus in it. And so what is this? It's a crystalline organism, but it's also an electrochemical organism. So you now start to understand from this greater level of knowledge why we are being bombarded and our kids are being bombarded with electrical and chemical pollution in food, in drink, in mobile phones, in electronic and microwave transmitters of all kinds. And we are being destabilized in terms of our maximum efficiency to decode and experience reality and to understand reality and to have a clarity of perception. And this is the key to the whole conspiracy. It is controlling our decoding system. So we decode a tiny range of frequencies. This is the box that we live in. These are the belief system prisons we live in, instead of opening our minds and accessing a vastly greater level of awareness and perception. And this is the whole basis of the conspiracy. You can have your banking scams and political scams and wars, and they're all important. They're all part of the process. But it's the manipulation of our sense of reality and keeping from us the true magnitude of who we are and even who we are. We are not the body. It's a vehicle to experience this reality.
But do you think, on this very point, now, at the moment, we're seeing allegedly a recession around us.
Right.
We're seeing the dollar gaining against the pound. The pound's going into decline. We're down to, I think, 162 against the pound. We're getting to a situation where we're beginning to believe everything we're reading in the papers. Now, do you think we're being fed this information as part of this vision to actually focus us in one direction, to take us away from what's really going on?
Well, you see, you can destabilize through electrochemical means with the stuff you put in food and all the electromagnetic pollution we have. But what does a hypnotist do? A hypnotist says, you are feeling sleepy. This is what your reality is. The man beside you is naked. There's an elephant in the audience. Now, what's happening to us all the time through verbal manipulation, verbal programming, is we are being bombarded for 24/7 through the mainstream media, which is nothing more than a public relations office for the official manipulated version of reality, which is why when anyone steps out of the norms like I did, and I have, They're immediately ridiculed by the mainstream media because the norms in society are where the media take its point of reference. So a few years ago, a few centuries ago, today's media would have been ridiculing anyone who said the Earth was flat, round, rather, a sphere, because the norm was that it was flat. And the same thing is happening now. Whatever the norm is, and these manipulating networks set the norms, the media then ridicule or condemn anyone who's outside of those norms. And what the media therefore is doing is constantly repeating real powerful form of mind control and belief implantation. Is they are repeating a fake version of reality, who we are, where we are, what's happening in the world, which is keeps us and encourages us to operate in a tiny, tiny range of perception of possibility. And so if you can program people's perception of what is going on in the world, i.e. there's a banking crash and we've got to give all this money to the banks. They've been screwing you all your life, but now you've got to pay even more through taxation to the people who've been screwing you because we got this problem and we've got to sort it out. If you are operating on that narrow band of awareness called the mainstream media, then you might say, oh, yeah, I'm worried about me money. I'm worried about me house. Give them the money.
Absolutely.
But when you open your mind and you see what's really happening in the world and the true nature of reality, even in the five-sense play-out world, the movie world of everyday experience, then you start to see that actually the game is very different. And what's happening with the banking chaos is they're creating a massive problem, engineering it, so that they can then offer the solution, which is a world central bank and a global banking centralized dictatorship, which will control all world finance in every country.
Oh, absolutely.
And what are they now doing, Ross?
Yeah, they're doing it.
Now, as we speak, they're suggesting that this must happen to solve the problem of the chaos which the
absolutely.
People offering the problem have actually created.
Well, do you know, this week alone, I get a press release from 10 Downing Street each week as a journalist, an update of what's being said. And those words that you said years and years ago, coming up again from Gordon Brown, working towards global governance.
Yeah.
And that's an actual press statement from our Prime Minister, working towards global governance. That worries me, because that seems to me to vindicate everything you've said about a new world order and us working towards a global governance.
Well, the thing is, you know, it's a strange feeling. It's a surreal experience, because I'm now watching my books over the years unfold on the television news. Mm. And then we ask the question, okay, why do we have this incessant obsession with the centralization of power in all areas of our lives? You look back, we've had this procession through centuries and decades and now years and even getting close to hours towards more and more centralization of power on a global level. Why? Because when you're the few and you want to control the many, you have to centralize decision-making. Mm-hmm. The more diversity of decision-making that you have, the less control any central few are going to have over it. So you have to centralize decision-making, because then your decisions affect and have to be followed, at least in theory, by everyone on the planet. This is why we're getting this mantra all the time now about international law. We must have international law. What is international law? It is a law that everyone on the planet has to obey, in theory anyway. And so if you want, which is what they do want, a world government, a world central bank, a world army, an amalgamation of NATO and the UN peacekeeping operation, a world currency, electronic, no cash, and a microchip population, then what you've got to do, and this is the way they work, a process I call problem, reaction, solution, you've got to keep creating the problems, get the people to react, do something in fear and outrage, oh, look what's happening, what they're going to do about it, and then they, who've covertly created the problem, offer the solutions to the problems they've created, which is the constant centralization of power. That's what all the solutions are. And we're seeing such a wonderful example now with what's happening in the financial industry.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
If we don't wake up, we're going to live in a global fascist dictatorship within 5 to 10 years.
Maybe even less.
Well, I'm definitely being optimistic with the 10. But if we do wake up and we do understand that we are not a physical body, that's a vehicle. I'm not, we're not Ethel Jones and Charlie Smith. We're not the lady that works down the corner shop. There are experiences. We are consciousness, infinite consciousness that is all that has, is, and ever will be. And when you move your point of observation from I am Ethel Jones and Charlie Smith to I am infinite consciousness having an experience as Charlie Jones and Ethel Smith, you are in this world physically in terms of the way you're experiencing it. You're not of this world in terms of your point of observation, and you realize what your true power is. And when enough of us do that, this house of cards called the global conspiracy, and it is a house of cards because we're holding it together, is going to come crashing down. And that's what we're going to do.
Okay, well, let's have another look at the DVD that you made at Brixton, and we'll come back in a few minutes and talk about this. Don't forget, you can text into the program 8778, type the word edge, leave a gap, and then your message, and we'll get that here. We'll be looking at the text in hour two. This is David again at the Brixton Academy.
As Michael Elner said, just look at us. Everything is backwards. Everything is upside down. Doctors destroy health. Lawyers destroy justice. Universities destroy knowledge. Governments destroy freedom. The major media destroys information. And religions destroy spirituality. I think there's more to know here. And it's all true. As H.L. Mencken said, the men the American people admire most extravagantly are the greatest liars. The men they detest most violently are those who try to tell them the truth. We live in topsy-turvy land. Why is everything upside down? Everything back to front? Why are there billions of bewildered people who don't understand who they are, where they are, what the whole business of life is all about? The world seems such a ball of confusion and complexity and bewilderment, but it is when you don't have the coordinates to connect things together. Because when you connect the dots, you start to see that apparent complexity as it's played out, an apparent bewilderment as it's played out, has a very seriously clear picture that emerges. Because as you connect the dots between different people, organizations, places, religions, history, suddenly the picture starts to form. Oh, so that's it. If you don't connect the dots, it's just a mass of what's all this about. When you connect the dots, you get the elephant in the living room. You can start to see daily life and the daily news or passes for it and all this stuff in a completely different light. And suddenly what seemed to be incomprehensible starts to make clearer and clearer sense. And that picture, as the dots are connected, the debts too, it's all part of it, is that there are two prime realities that we are experiencing. We're experiencing the movie. That's the movie version of reality that we're given by the mainstream media, by what passes for education, and all the other sources of mainstream information, which explain away events in the world in a certain way. But behind that, it becomes clearer as the dots join up that there is another agenda behind that, which the movie is simply there as a cover story to obscure and hide. And the foundation of that cover story, foundation of that secret agenda, is to get billions of people on this planet to wear a mask and play out a false identity that they don't even know is false. You know, we can talk about banking scams and political scams and secret societies, and we should, and we will later on as we go through this. But what those involved in the research of all this whole conspiracy stuff, I feel, need to appreciate is if that's as far as you go and no further, then you too are playing a kind of movie, because you are looking at how it's playing out instead of the real foundation from which this whole conspiracy is based. And that is manipulating people to believe they're something they are not and to forget what they really are.
Well, interesting stuff, isn't it? And we're going to be showing a bit more of that in just a while. Now, you were talking about coordinates there, a very important part of the whole discussion. Explain what you meant by that.
Well, I've been talking about coordinates for years because once you've got these, then the world can be seen with much greater clarity. And I know this from people who've heard me speak in the past. You can start to see the world as it is rather than what as you've told it is. So, coordinate one, where does this conspiracy want to take the world? Well, it wants a centralized fascist dictatorship, like I said earlier, with a world government, world central bank, world army, world currency, electronic, not cash, and it wants a microchip population connected to a global computer. And they found that hilarious when I first said that many years ago. They're not laughing now. Mm-hmm. The other two key coordinates are, what are the methods used to take us there? One is problem reaction solution, as I call it, where you create the problem, you get the mainstream media unquestioningly, pathetically, to take your official version of your problem and pass it on to the people unquestioned. So the people react with fear, with outrage, with bewilderment, and say something along the lines of, this can't go on, something must be done, what are they going to do about it? Which allows those who've covertly created the problem to then offer the solution in changes in legislation and changes in society which advance the agenda. And the other coordinate is the other method they use, which I call the totalitarian tiptoe. You're at A, you know you're going to Z, but if you go in one great leap, then the change is so vast that people go, they even look up from the game show and they say, what's going on? Because the change is so great. So you go in little steps, as big as you can get away with without too much opposition and reaction, but you go in little steps, but you know where you're going. That's how the European Union went from a free trade area, nothing to worry about, just about jobs and freedom of trade, and it's gone to what it is today, which is a globalized or a centralized, rather, fascist state. And once you have these three coordinates, where they want to take us, and add to that structure massive surveillance and control, the Orwellian state, and then you've got the two coordinates of the methods, problem, reaction, solution, and the totalitarian tiptoe, those three things alone, if you understand them, look at the news, look at what politicians say, look at how they're justifying change in society to centralize power, and those three coordinates will open the world to you as it really is, as opposed to what the movie is telling you it is.
Absolutely. Well, we're coming up towards a break. We've got about a minute to go. Can we actually make a change? I mean, the people viewing tonight actually did something. Can we make that change? Can we actually tip this round in our favor?
Hey, the number of people who are in awareness manipulating us towards this end are a handful. The number of people being manipulated are 6 billion plus. I think I see an answer to this.
Absolutely. Okay, well, join us in the next part where we're going to look at your text messages. You can send those in 8778. Type the word edge, leave a gap, and then your message. Keep it short and concise, if you would. That'd be great. You can also get copies of David's DVD if you go online to edgemediatv.com/nowthatsweird. And believe me, well worth having. And David, we're going to come back and talk a lot more with this in just a few moments' time and see another clip from the video. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. If you're going to make that cup of tea, make it quick, because we'll be back with you in about 3 minutes' time here on Now That's Weird.
Welcome back to Now That's Weird with me, Ross Hemsworth. Being seen tonight all over the world on the internet, on a webcast, and of course here on EMTV. There's forums at edgemediatv.com if you want to get on the forums and talk about what you're hearing about tonight. You can email in to me after the show, ross@nowthatsweird.co.uk, and you can text in right now on 8778. That's 8778. Apparently at your normal call cost from wherever you are. Don't forget to type the word edge, leave a space, and then your message. Now, we've got a few texts here, David. Let's go to the texts, and I have to go into Mr. Magoo mode here,
so I apologise.
Guest 741, it says here, does Britain control America? Are we the home of the Illuminati?
Well, in many ways, it is one of the great centres of the manipulation, but it's not England. It's the centre of a network, and if I could just give you people some background if they haven't come across this. When I spent years putting together the structure of how the world's controlled today, and it's a very simple structure, it's pyramids within pyramids. So if you look at like Russian dolls, one doll inside a bigger doll inside a bigger doll, the structure they've created is pyramids within pyramids within pyramids. So, for instance, a bank is a pyramid. Most of the people that work in the bank are at the bottom of the pyramid. They're the people you give your checks to and all the rest of it. Then you get the bank managers, and then you go up and go up and go up and go up until you get to the top of the bank, where a tiny few people are the only ones in receipt of the full understanding of the agenda of the bank, how all these different contributions fit together, and what the real direction and agenda is. Everyone else is just going to work, doing their little piece, and going home. They're not trying to manipulate anybody, but add all the contributions together, and it's a very different picture, and only they know how that fits together. And the bank goes into another pyramid and another pyramid until you've got one that encompasses the whole of the global banking system. And at the top of that are the same interbreeding families. Transnational corporations in themselves are a pyramid. They go into pyramids that eventually encompass all of them. So at the top of that pyramid, there is one transnational corporation under many names, not multiple ones as there appear to be. And it's the same with governments, political parties, and all the rest of it, which is why when you change government, you don't change policy, because a different mask on the same face has come in called a different political party. This is all part of the illusion to give us the impression that we're free and have choice. Because if we knew we didn't, then we might do something about it. So then the question comes, Ross, who are these families that are atop, in the end at the top of all these pyramids, whether it's transnational corporations, banking, religion, politics, whatever, they all go into the same families. I started to go back looking at an origin for this once I'd put this structure together. And I got way back, thousands of years BC, and this is only a point where you can pick the story up. It goes back much, much further than this, all over the world. But you can pick up places in the world, particularly Sumer, which became Babylon, which is now Iraq. You know, they've not just gone into Iraq for oil. They've gone in for multiple reasons, and one of them is that area, Mesopotamia, the land between two rivers, is of fundamental historical and probably energetic importance to these families, because that's where so many of them came from. And what they did is they moved out of that area, then they were all over other parts of the world as well, but these ones I've particularly focused on. They moved out, they eventually became the families behind the Roman Empire. They created the Roman Church, which became Christianity in all its forms. And then they moved up into Northern Europe, where they interbred with the elite families of that area, creating the European aristocracy and royal families. These European elite families were behind the colonial powers, not least Britain, the empire on which the sun never set, they said, which took over so much of the world. And then there came a point where it appeared that the European powers, colonial powers, had given independence to the former colonies. What they actually did was replace a form of dictatorship that has a finite life, which is one you can see, touch, and taste, colonial rule, communism, fascism, apartheid. The people under that control know they're being controlled, and they know who their controllers are, basically, at least the ones they can see. The greatest form of control is a control you can't see, where you sit in a prison but you can't see the bars, because people don't rebel against not being free when they think they are. And what happened was when apparently independence were given to these colonies all over the world, what happened is they exchanged in-your-face dictatorship with rule by secret society. They left the bloodline out there in these countries and the secret society network through which they manipulate their agenda. And so what they've created from Europe, coming back to the question, and London is a massive center, but there are other countries in Europe as well, at operational level, that are very, very important, France, Germany, etc. But London is massively important in the center of this network. Not the British government, the network of the secret society network. And how it operates is this. It's like a transnational corporation, but we're talking secret societies and networks. In Europe is the headquarters, if you like, of the secret societies, the headquarters of the corporation. In all the other countries around the world are, if you like, subsidiary companies of the corporation, which are networks, secret society networks. And their job in each country, America, wherever, is to manipulate their society in terms of banking, in terms of business, military, government, media, in line with the centrally dictated agenda coming out of the headquarters in Europe. And this is how they can get the same changes happening in apparently unconnected countries all over the world at the same time through this web, this spider's web with the spider at the center, which at operational level is in Europe, but at deeper levels is probably elsewhere, probably in the East and not least China. And so through this process, they can, from Europe, manipulate countries all over the world. And what they've done with the United States is they've set them up as a fall guy. You know, I've got a lot of time for American people. I've spent a lot of time there. I think they're lovely people. I don't agree with the John Wayne mentality at a national level, which many people seem to have there, but as people, I think Americans are lovely people, massively manipulated and massively controlled. But they are perceived as the bad guy because they're firing the bullets. The United States government and military are firing the bullets, but what is missed is the guns being loaded in Europe. And so everyone's going, big bad America, it's America. And over here, Europe's going, oh no, what me? No, it's not me. We're just little Europe.
Well, let's come back to the next question.
And this is how it operates. This is how they can coordinate it.
The next question sort of ties into it, really, because this is from Paul in Warrington. He said he believes the EU will take over next year on January the 1st. Parliament can be done away with, leaving us with EU rules, with police forces upholding already now. What do you make of that? Is it now we're moving into part of that globalisation through a European state?
Well, I mentioned the structure earlier about the world government, the world central bank. Under the world government, they want a series of super states, which are the next level of control. The European Union, the American Union, starting with the North American Union, which is very, very close to being in the public domain. The African Union, which you already have. The Asia-Pacific Union, and probably a union of in the Middle Near East. And then under that, they want to break what are now nation states up into regions and take the sovereignty away to dilute any a chance of a united response or rejection of this edifice of power above them. So we've now reached the point in Britain where 70-75% of laws made in a sovereign state affecting apparently a sovereign people are made by the European Union, and overwhelmingly, not even by elected people, farcical as that is, but by bureaucratic dictators. And this whole, you know, I wrote a book in 1994 called And the Truth Shall Set You Free. It came out in 95. If people read that now, who don't know anything about this, it would blow their minds. Why? Because what's happening now is in that book in great detail. And the reason I say that is to make the point that these apparently random happenings in the world, like the Lisbon Treaty, let's have more centralization of power in Europe, let's take away more national sovereignty, let's have a president of Europe, a foreign minister of Europe, as if, oh yeah, I've had a good idea. It was all coordinated and planned when the European Union was first started. Because after the Second World War, if someone had said, OK, I've got a great idea, what we're going to do is we're going to have the centralized control of Europe. People would say, hold on a second, 55 million casualties. We've just fought a war to stop that. You're having a laugh. So, of course, they didn't do it then. They announced a free trade area. Just good for jobs. And then stepping stone, totalitarian tiptoe, exactly as planned from the start, they've taken away more and more sovereign power from nations and taken more to the center. And they want a global police force, yes, but they certainly want a European police force. We're now talking about DNA databases in Britain outrageously being created through taking the DNA of people who are never convicted of anything. And fusing that with a European database on DNA. So now we've got the European Union database, and they want to have a European army, which will be part of the world army. Funny, I was talking about a world army, and a journalist said to me, what's the use of a world army? There'd be no one to fight, you know. And I thought, you're a journalist, aren't you? Of course, what the world army is there for is to impose the will of the world government on any nation or group on the planet that doesn't want to accept the diktats of the world government. This is what it's all about. And this surveillance and this constant Orwellian explosion of new laws and impositions, that's not there for the mass of the people, because they know the mass of the people will just go along with it and keep their heads down. All that is for the people who are waking up.
Absolutely.
And are seeing the game and therefore have the power to do something about it, which we do.
Mm. Now, one of the interesting things that you out there may or may not know about what Dave is talking about tonight is last weekend there was a secret meeting took place in America in a place called Lake Clear, reported in one small independent newspaper, nowhere else in America. And apparently the heads of the military top brass in the Pentagon, Germany, France, Italy, and apparently they believe Great Britain, that was put in there as apparently because nobody knew for sure, all got together for a secret meeting. Now, what would be the purpose of that? Why a secret meeting of all the top military brass from Europe and America in one place? Could be a rational explanation, something to do with Iraq, for instance, a withdrawal of troops, but I think that's unlikely.
Well, when you get to the level of the secret agenda rather than the movie, there's a very logical explanation. When people at these high levels of the military from all over the world get together, it's a simple thing: coordination of policy, coordination of approach, coordination of action. Because through these pyramids, the military is also pyramids within pyramids. I mean, they send the troops out to Iraq and Afghanistan to get blown away, and they're just the fodder. Mm. And when they come back, you know, oh, support our troops. Yeah, get our troops out there to get killed and kill people. Oh, that's great. Oh, we've got some troops back, and they've been blown away. They've lost limbs. They've been burned horrifically. What are we going to do with them? Shh.
Don't tell too many
people. Hey, yeah. Want a pension? Oh, not sure about that. What compensation? Oh, not sure about that. That's a lot, isn't it? Absolutely. And all the rest of it. So that's the level of the bottom of the pyramid in the military. Mm. But you start going up, and those people fighting at that level, they think they're fighting terrorists in Iraq.
Right.
They think they're fighting terrorists in Afghanistan. When you get up to this level, with the kind of level that you're talking about, those people know far more about what the agenda is and the fact that it is a coordinated agenda to take the planet over. And to do that, if you want a world centrally controlled tyranny, you have to centralize power, and that includes in the military, and that's what these sort of meetings are all about.
Okay, well, let's go back to the DVD. This was David talking at the Brixton Academy recently, earlier this year. I want to take a look at this particular clip, and we'll be back talking some more afterwards. Don't forget, keep those texts coming in, 8778, type the word EDGE, leave a gap, and then your message. Let's have a look at this next clip.
Now, this is doing the rounds quite a lot at the moment. The law of attraction, they call it. I've been talking about this for years. In terms of what you put out is what you pull back, but I think there are a lot more elements to it than some people seem to think. When you are in a certain vibrational state because of your emotional, mental state, all the rest of it, you're putting out a vibration that reflects that. It's like a magnetic attraction, basically, vibrational magnetism, I call it.
And that is going to lock in to vibrational fields of like frequency, and it's going to draw them towards you like a magnet. So what you put out, you lock into and draw towards you. When people, you know, I've met so many people that keep attracting the same kinds of people into their lives. And I'm watching it and I'm thinking, sorry, now, not another one. It's like just the same as that last bloke and the one before him. Why? Because what's going out ain't changing, so what's coming in isn't changing. Because what we draw into us as relationships and jobs and experiences and all that stuff is a reflection, a holographic reflection of us. We all live in our own little universes, really. There are points where we share the same basic reality, but we live in our own universes because what we're putting out is what we're drawing towards us. The question is, how do we change what we're putting out? Relationships. Relationships are a vibrational attraction. We draw them in. When we sync with people, we sync with them energetically, you have a relationship. Then, for whatever reason, someone might change and their energetic field changes, their magnetism changes or whatever, their vibrational field changes, and suddenly it's not syncing with that person anymore. In the holographic play-out world, we say that relationship has broken down and they've parted. Well, they've parted vibrationally. And sometimes, you know, that's good because you get things from each other and you learn from each other and then, hey, it's time to move on and have other experiences. But it's the vibrational connection that draws them in. It's the same with jobs. It's the same with luck. Luck. Why are some people lucky and why are some people unlucky? Because what they're putting out is what they're drawing towards them. I watch in sport and football and stuff and sports people. These people that they get so close to winning, but they never quite can win. It's almost like they're frightened of winning. And when I observe some of this stuff psychologically, it's almost as if they can't believe that it's possible for them to win. Oh no, that happens to other people. It doesn't happen to me. So when you get to that point where you're just about to achieve, somehow in the holographic play-out world, you manifest something that actually stops you winning, even though it seems to be no problem, it's going to happen. And it's what people call having a self-destruct button. Just when you're about to achieve something, where's the button? Boom. Oh, something's happened. And it doesn't achieve what looked is obviously going to happen. It's because of the energy we're putting out, which is a reflection of our mental and emotional state. And one real big energetic magnetic attraction of reality is intent, I've found. Intent. An intent. This is what I'm going to achieve. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I want to do. This is what I will do. When that intent goes out, it goes out as a vibrational field. And it draws back towards us all that we need to achieve that intent every time. The thing is, at this point, it breaks down with so many people because what they need to experience to achieve the intent they say they want is not something they'd like to experience. So I'll bugger that for a game of soldiers. I'm not having that. I don't want it that badly. And when we start to transform, things start to change in our energy field. And when that happens, things that we were drawing towards us in the old energetic state are not making a vibrational synchronization anymore. And so, in the holographic play-out world, relationships break down, or you lose your job, or you move home, or something happens. Your life changes in the play-out world of the projected holographic reality because what's projecting it has changed. And so when we put out an intent, this is what I want to do, I want to expand my mind, I want to open my mind, I want to connect the true magnitude of who I am, there are things that come towards you that you don't often like very much, but it's necessary to break down those structures within us so that that intent can be fulfilled.
Well, fulfilling the intent, that's what it's all about, and bringing the power back. How do we do that, David?
Well, the thing is, Ross, that, you know, there's two ways of looking at a problem. You can try to find a solution to it, or you can remove the cause of it. And removing the cause is by far the most efficient way of doing it, because we're drowning in solutions. What is the cause of the problem that allows a few people to control 6 billion? 6 billion daily, by the minute, give their power away to the few they don't even know exist. They give it away by believing that they are their body, and therefore, once you identify with Charlie Smith or Ethel Jones, you're identifying with a sense of limitation, with a sense of powerlessness, with a sense of little me. So we need to move our point of observation for a start from the body is who we are to the body is our experience, and we are consciousness, infinite consciousness, pure genius, having an experience. And if you get so caught in body consciousness, and the five sense awareness is your basically your only way of decoding and perceiving the world, you cut yourself off from the full magnitude of who you are. And basically, instead of you infinite consciousness, that which leaves the body at what we call death, that which the near-death experiences are having being aware of when they leave the body, what they really are, infinite consciousness. And they talk about how their minds and consciousness massively expands to multiple levels once they leave the body. Why? Because the body operates like a telescope. It takes us down and focuses in a tiny range of frequencies, which we call this reality. That's fine. It's an experience. But if you get so caught in this reality that you identify the vehicle with you, you cut yourself off from the true magnitude of who you are. Now, this whole conspiracy is based on getting people into that state, because once they're in that state, they become a herd of sheep, basically. And controllable and manipulatable. Once you move your point of observation, and I've done it and I've seen others do it, and really I can't emphasize this enough. People say, well, what do we do? You know, oh, it's so hard, and I have to sit cross-legged in India for years and meditate. No, you just have to move your point of awareness and your point of self-identity and live it from I am Ethel Jones to I am infinite consciousness having experience as Ethel Jones. I tell you, your whole life will change when you do that. And the key thing then, as I was saying in that clip, is when you move your point of observation, your energy changes, your energetic field changes. Mm-hmm. So what you're putting out changes, so what you bring towards you in people, places, experiences, opportunities changes. And what people experience in that initial period is their life breaking down. I did it in public. And as your life breaks down, you think it's terrible. Everything's going wrong. Oh, my life's breaking down. My relationship's broken up. This has gone wrong. When in fact, what is happening is the old programs are breaking down as you change, and the manifestations of those programs, your old life, is breaking down. It's a good thing. Enjoy it. Go with it, because on the other side of it is the paradise that you were looking for when you put out the intent. Life presents your greatest gifts so often, it has for me, as your worst nightmare. But with hindsight, you realize it wasn't your worst nightmare, it was your greatest gift.
It's like every cloud has a silver lining. Now, we've got just about a minute left, so I'm going to ask you this very quickly. There's three or four people all here texting in with the same question. How can we do something about this? How can we make change?
I've just said the first thing we need to do. Einstein said, quite rightly, words to the effect of, you cannot solve problems with the same level of consciousness that created them. And that's what we've been doing because of the way that our consciousness has been suppressed. You have a political party with a certain political consciousness, and they do this. Another party replaces them with the same kind of consciousness. It's got a different name, but they do the same. That's why nothing changes. We need a consciousness shift, and that means moving our point of observation. And once you do that, you become aware of your best contribution to making a difference. You don't have to keep saying to people, what should I do? What do you think I should do? Because the body and thought and intellect and what should I do is a very low level of consciousness.
Right. I've got to stop you there, David, because we're running into a break. Sorry
okay.
about that. We will
well,
continue
with you
on
then.
This in just a moment. Yeah, let's run together. Join us in a few more minutes for more. Now That's Weird.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the final part of Now That's Weird. My God, where have these 2 hours gone? We have someone like David here. I don't have to say anything. He does all the talking for me. It's brilliant.
I've got verbal diarrhea, mate. I've had the hands-on healing and the crystal
therapy.
They
normally say that about me.
Can't shift it.
Now, I've got to say, there was a quote by Phyllis Schlemmer, the author, some time ago, that 12 people could change the world. And we're getting lots of texts here, as we said before the break, about people saying, David, what can we do to help? We are but small against this massive problem. And there's a lovely one here from guest 754 that says, you have thrown a stone at Goliath, David. A lot of us have been waiting for this.
Well, let's switch that around. I ain't David. I'm Goliath, if you want to use that symbology. I'm infinite consciousness, having an experience. I am all possibility. I am all power. I am all awareness. And so are you. Potentially, everyone is the same. We've just shut ourselves off from it. Mm. Now, you try manipulating that. Eh? You try manipulating hundreds, thousands, millions, billions of people who are in awareness of who they really are. I mean, you know, it's a fly on an elephant's back, the Illuminati and all this stuff. And they can only control, because they're in a box, don't think they're all-powerful bunch of idiots. You know what I mean? Crikey, if you had a brain cell, it would die of loneliness. I mean, anyone who is that stupid as to want this form of control is themselves suffering from unbelievable levels of insecurity. They're just frightened people. You look at someone who's insecure, they want to control everything. Secure people, whatever. I'm not getting into outcomes, whatever, just flow with it. Security, my power's here. Insecure people, my power's there. Oh, crikey, you know, I must control everything. So we're looking at massively insecure people that are actually behind this, fearful people. And the way that they've controlled humanity is by putting us in a smaller box of awareness than they're in. Like they understand the illusory nature of reality, or the core ones do anyway. And how they can manipulate the way we decode reality and therefore en masse dictate our reality. But we're now at a time when we are starting to wake up to this and take our power back. So they are David, if you want to use that big man, small man, you know, symbolism. I'm Goliath, you're Goliath, we're all Goliath, we just forgot it. And we can express our power in many, many, many ways. First of all, forget consequences. I'm infinite consciousness. I don't think, oh, well, if I try to do something, what will happen to me? I'm infinite consciousness. Ethel Jones is asking what will happen if I do what I believe to be right. I'm infinite consciousness. I just do what I believe to be right. I don't have to think about consequences. Freedom doesn't do consequences, or it's not free, does it? Absolutely. Oh, I'm freedom, but I'll be free if I know what the consequences are. I am freedom. I am free. No thought of consequences. So let's get out of this. Oh, what will happen if I express my power? What will happen if I do what I believe to be right? Because this world will change, Ross, massively in a short space of time when one thing happens. When people start doing en masse what they know to be right, rather than the usual, every day, every second form of decision-making, what's right for me in this situation, right? That's why we have people dying of starvation in a world of plenty. That's why we have people in sweatshops making clothes for the rich. It's because it's worse, not my problem. What's it? When we do what we know to be right, all the time, everything changes because injustice goes, imposition goes. Someone else who has their free expression taken away is denying me my freedom of expression. So his problem is my problem, and so I'm over there because his problem says something about me. For instance, if there's one person on this planet who does not have the right to free expression and express their views, then no one on the planet has the right to free expression, because what they call free expression will not actually be so. It will be what is acceptable within the bounds that are not acceptable, what this guy's saying. So you keep in these bounds, and then you have free expression. Nonsense. We only have free expression when he has free expression. So instead of saying, well, it's not my problem, I don't agree with him anyway, we stand up for each other and make sure that everyone has the right to be free. Give you a great example. The greatest form of stopping this happening is what's in it for me, what are the consequences for me, and divide and rule. So they divide us through religions, nonsensical religions. They divide us through political persuasion, through income bracket, through perceived class and genetic background, through countries and colors and race. And so we're so busy fighting and cussing and blaming each other, we don't look up and see some guy holding the strings on us who's actually holding the strings on the guy we're having the argument with, and it's all divide and rule. So the first thing we need to understand is that they're not trying to create a global fascist dictatorship to imprison Jewish people or white Americans or black Africans or Australians or Christians or Muslims. It's for all of us. So if we are going to go on fighting with each other and competing with each other in the way that we have, then we'll be divided and ruled into a global fascist state. And wouldn't it be funny if all these different people in all these different religions and all these different races that are used to divide and rule us are sitting in the same prison cell symbolically? Well, you got a lifetime now to argue who's got the best religion and who's the master bloody race. We have got to stop being divided and ruled, and we've got to start standing united behind freedom for all people, including freedom for people we don't agree with and we don't like. If we don't do that, then this is going to happen. If we do it, the House of Cards is going to fall, because that House of Cards is being held together by us. And when we step out and we say we're not cooperating with our own enslavement anymore, then that House of Cards must fall, because the few can only control the rest when the rest give their power to the few and cooperate with the few building their prison cell. So, for instance, simple things, just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about. Non-violent, non-cooperation with our own enslavement. Someone puts a trash bin out on the wrong day, gets fined £100. This is happening in Britain now.
Which is crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. What happens the next day if we really want to do something about this, even on that what seems a mundane level? Next day, thousands of people in that community have wheelie bins out, right? You know, someone is fined for this. Next day, thousands of people do the same thing. Yeah, come on, what are you going to do about it? We break the system down. Absolutely. We had the poll tax a few years ago, Margaret Thatcher's poll tax, a deeply unfair tax. Now, it came down. Why did it come down? Because it affected many middle-class people, as well as working-class people, as they call them. It broke down that divide and rule between those two groups. So there was a united response from many people: we're not paying the poll tax. I don't care. You'll go to prison. I don't care. Not paying the poll tax. En masse, that happened. What happened? Poll tax had to go. And if you take that symbolism or that structure, that theme, if we did that on a mass scale, completely non-violently, absolutely non-violently, we don't have to be violent. That's playing in their stadium. They do violence. We don't do violence. We're infinite consciousness. It doesn't do violence. You know, when we are in a situation where we are non-violently refusing to cooperate en masse, then we'll see where the power is, right?
Absolutely.
And we'll realize that we're Goliath. And
let's,
we
let's
have
go
the
back
power.
To the, and let's the, go back to the text.
The tail's been wagging the dog. We need to change it.
Okay, let's go back to the text, because we've had, and I've got to say, we've had hundreds and hundreds of texts in, and obviously we're trying to get through a few of them, so apologies if your text has been sent in and not read out. We will try to get to some more. Guest 834 comes up with something which is going to take us onto a slightly different tact, but okay. I think this is something that's very important right now. He says, "Hi David, do you think we are getting ready for a big UFO story, and is the government about to tell the truth?" Now, I've got to add to this, just before we go into the answer to this, that on October the 14th, an Australian clairvoyant, Blossom Goodchild, predicted a three-day massive UFO sighting over the southern hemisphere, which apparently didn't come off, although some people think maybe it did, on a different level of consciousness. We've had disclosure from the MOD again within the last week, more UFO sightings. We're seeing at the moment probably more UFO sightings in the media than we've seen for years, and we're hearing more of a build-up towards something, whether it be a false flag alien invasion, whether we're being conned, or whether there are actually aliens out there. And perhaps more frighteningly, we're being heard or told about the Anunnaki, and the chances of a return to us being enslaved by these people that will come in goodness and light, when in fact they won't at all. Now, what's your whole take on the UFO and disclosure area?
Well, you know, it's a mass of information, and getting the wheat from the chaff is a challenge. But if you can take one theme, and which is the theme that I've been talking about, you know, it's kind of funny when you look in that night sky on a clear night and you see thousands of stars in the Milky Way, an explosion, and people go, "Do you think we're alone? I mean, you know, what was that?" So of course, human form is not the only intelligent form of life, and well, is it the only intelligent form of life? Is it intelligent? We'll find out in the next few years, because we have plenty of evidence that it's not when it shuts down from its full magnitude of who it is. But there is and has been widely written about for many years now this project that has been brought to light by researchers called Project Bluebeam, which is a plan to stage a fake alien invasion to bring about a world army, world centralized government, and all the rest of it. It's possible, and the documents exist, that's for sure, but it is possible, because when you want to create a global change, you need global problems to which you can add global solutions. So we have the global war on terror, totally fake, which are based on a fake story of 9/11, an inside job done by intelligence agencies and the military, not by 19 Arab terrorists who couldn't fly Cessnas, you know. I can't fly a one-engine jet, but oh, I'm a brilliant on wide-body ones, you know, please. Anyway, you've got the global warming, global problem, international law, global solutions, global warming caused by human-made carbon emissions, you know. I mean, you know, are you kidding? It's a joke when you look at the background. Total joke. And I've learned many, many things over the last 20 years of researching and traveling to, 46 countries now. And one of them is, if Al Gore's involved, it's a scam. End of story, by the way. And once he became the front man for global warming, it was clearly, I've got to look at this, because this is a scam, because he's involved. And another potential global threat, global problem, of course, is some kind of threat from some non-human invasion. And, you know, Kissinger and people like that have used the phrase, you know, people will want, basically, paraphrasing, people will want people on the streets in Los Angeles, the military on the streets in Los Angeles, if they think they are being threatened from outside. And so it is possible, but if we hold on to the coordinates, where they want to take us and how they want to take us there, and look at this UFO disclosure and all this stuff from those coordinates perspective, it will give us a much clearer fix on what the game is as it unfolds than it will if we don't have the coordinates. But we've got to stop being spectators, you know? We've got to stop standing on the other side of the street, even those who are in some awareness now of the game, going, "Ooh, look, that's interesting. What do you think is going to happen now? Well, I looked at this and I read that book and it said this, so I think he could do that now." Hold on a second. We're not watching a movie. I'm watching, "Oh, look, yes, we are in a global prison now. Yeah, they said that would happen." We've got to now cross the street and start saying, "We're not having it. We're not standing for this enslavement anymore," and come together in a united way, and in a way where we forget about consequences and start doing what we know to be right. For this reason, I've said this before, but it's important. We've reached the point now where we're going to have to look our grandchildren and our children in the eye pretty soon when they ask us what we were doing when the global fascist state, which by then will control every area of their lives, including their thoughts, what we were doing when that was coming in. Mm. And there's going to be, at this time, a lot of people averting their eyes when they try to give an answer to that. We can still not have to answer that question if we stop talking about it. Stop thinking we can't do anything about it, which is a great excuse not to do anything, and start to say at the end of every day, "What have I done today to make a difference to human freedom, my freedom, the freedom of everyone else, and the freedom of our kids and grandkids. Because if you look at society now, and the point we've reached with this Orwellian unfolding of surveillance and control and centralization of power, what the hell is it going to be like for 10 years from now, 20 years from now, right? And we are very, very important people, our generations alive today, for this reason. We come into a world as children, and the world is as it appears to be, right? So that's the norm to you. We at the moment, Ross, are the last generations who were born at a time when there was some kind of freedom, mm-hmm. who are going to therefore have that coordinate of what it was like compared with what it's now becoming very fast. Children being born today won't have that coordinate. No. To them, control, surveillance, imposition, centralization of power will be the norm. That's how life is here. Mm-hmm. So we are the generations that got to do something about this. Now, and we have the power to do it. It's the will that we need.
On that very point, the whole microchip thing, we're hearing at the moment that everyone's going to be microchipped, we're all going to have this ID thing in, you know, implants in the arm or whatever. Now, you mentioned on the DVD, I've watched the whole thing, unfortunately the public viewers tonight have only seen a part of it, that we are a biological computer.
Exactly.
The worst thing that could possibly happen to a computer is somebody to put a Duff chip in it.
I met a CIA scientist in 1997 who approached me through a third party because he wanted to tell me information that he couldn't get out but he thought was vital. This guy, when I met him, joined the CIA as a scientist in his 20s. He was a genius in the area of magnetics. He thought he was serving his country. He soon realized that what we've been talking tonight was happening. So he rebelled. He refused to work for them. He wakes up one day... he goes out one day during this rebellion and he has missing time. He wakes up on a medical type bench and as he gets his faculties back, he realizes there's a shampoo sachet, see-through shampoo sachet on his chest with an orangey golden liquid inside. They call them patches in the CIA. Someone's been patched. What they'd done was manipulated his body to need the drug in this patch to survive or he starts to die. And they have to replace the patch every 72 hours. And if he doesn't come back and work for them, use his genius, the patch is not removed and he starts to die and he's got kids and a family and he doesn't want to do that. So he talked to me to try to get this information out. And one of the things he said to me, he said, if tell people that if they say no to just one thing, say no to the microchip. Because it's not just about electronic tagging, though it is about that. People, every computer knowing where you are and all the rest of it. It's also about the fact that once you have a microchip inside you, they can externally manipulate you in terms of your physical health and your mental and emotional state. They can isolate you individually, or they can do it en masse, creating hysteria or creating docility and subordinate behavior. And so that's what the microchip's really about. And we and this thing about ID cards, totalitarian tiptoe. It's the tiptoe to the microchip. Chipping domestic animals is to get us used to chipping. Chipping clothing now is all part of bringing this chipping in. We have to say no to the microchip. But let me say this too: the power of consciousness, open, aware consciousness, has the power to overcome any technology and any imposition. It's the body computer that is subjected to it and is manipulated by it. And so if we allow ourselves to become aware or have an identity that the body is us, our point of observation moves to the five sense level, we enter the realm where this stuff can control us. When we move our point of observation and we are consciousness having the experience, they cannot get to those vibrational levels. They can only manipulate the receiver transmitter. They cannot get to consciousness in its true sense because it's vibrating too quickly for them. They can't get out there. And so the very foundation of everything, Ross, what can I do, everything, is we must become conscious, because vast numbers, the vast majority of people still in the world, though it's changing rapidly, are still not conscious. They are being controlled in their perceptions by the programmed body computer. And that's why so many people are the same, and they react the same, and they think the same. Because the computer is just reacting to input and therefore reacting to program. Absolutely. Once you move your consciousness, you become a maverick. You become someone who expresses uniqueness, who sees multiple things that the computer level can't see, including a way out of this. Because in the end, we can do all the things that I'm talking about, but in the end, what this world is like the projection of a movie on the screen. You want to change a movie, it's no good standing and shouting at the screen for the movie to change, because that's just a projection, it's just going to play out. We've got to get back to the projector and change the reel, because then the movie must change, because it's just a projection. And therefore, we must change what is projecting exactly. The movie. In other words, creating our daily experience. On an individual level, we are, by our the way we decode reality and how open in terms of consciousness we are, and collectively, somewhere beyond visible light, outside of this conscious awareness frequency range, there is a projection of this holographic internet which we're decoding, the collective reality. We got to get to that and change it. And I tell you what, I'm going to get to that before I leave this reality.
We've got to leave this reality, I'm afraid, in about 40 seconds' time. David, it's been a pleasure talking to you. 2 hours isn't long enough. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again on the show.
Yeah, been a pleasure.
I'd just like to very quickly say thank you to the competition winners from my radio show who are here with us tonight, Rasmus in Denmark and Daniela, to also Sharon and Brian. And who else was it? Mark and Brian. So two Brians in here. So thanks to all of them who took part in the competition to be in our audience here tonight. You've been watching Now That's Weird. It's the first part of Series 2. We'll be back on our regular slot on Saturday nights from 8 till 10. I'd like to thank David Icke. I'd like to thank the crew here tonight. Thank the audience. But thank, most of all of you at home for watching. I hope you've enjoyed these 2 hours. This has been Ross Hemsworth. This is Now...